Asia Pacific currents.
News and labour issues from the Asia Pacific region.
We strongly condemn the police that arrest the protesters.
Saturday mornings at 9 o'clock.
On Community Radio 3CR.
Workers of the world should unite to fight this greedy capitalist.
Brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. Good morning and welcome to another episode of Asia Pacific Currents here on Community Radio 3CR. I'm Giselle Hannah.
I'm James Barry.
I'm Kieran Bennett.
We're taking you through to 9:30 this morning. Of course, Asia Pacific Currents is brought to you by Australia Asia Worker Links. You can find us on the web, all the ws.aawl.org.au. We're on Facebook and Substack, so look us up on those social media platforms. In the second part of today's show, we're going to be speaking with Josh Cullen, and who is the recently outgoing secretary of RAFWU, but formerly was one of the founding members of Australia-Bangladesh Solidarity Network. And we're going to be talking to him about the 13-year anniversary of the collapse of Rana Plaza, which, in fact, is our leading story for the morning. So perhaps, comrades, we'll get straight into news from around the region.
That's right. On Friday, unions around the world marked 13 years since the collapse of Rana Plaza in Bangladesh, which cost the lives of 1,134 garment workers, one of the worst instances of industrial homicide on record. Thousands of others were injured in the collapse that exposed to the world how the global garment supply chains prioritise profit over worker safety. Cracks had appeared in the building the day before, but despite complaints from the workers, most of whom were women, they were ordered to attend their shifts. 3 weeks after the collapse, Industrial Global Union and UNI Global Union negotiated a legally binding agreement with international garment brands, holding them directly accountable for safety in their supply chains. What followed has been measurable, documented change. However, the agreement has faced legal challenges from factory owners, and some brands have chose to leave the agreement. Nevertheless, the agreement expanded into an international accord in 2023, which is under renegotiation this year.
And let's head on to South Korea, where tens of thousands of Samsung electronics workers rallied at a sprawling factory complex south of Seoul on Thursday. They were venting their anger over compensation levels ahead of a planned lengthy strike that could disrupt AI chip production. Union organisers and police put the number of protesters at 40,000, making the demonstration the largest to date for Samsung, which has long been known for its union-busting tactics, but saw workers walk out for the first time in 2024. Union membership has since surged, and unions now represent over 70% of the workforce. Several unions, representing about 74,000 workers at Samsung, are working together to highlight Samsung's failure to offer adequate compensation despite its strong performance. Unions rejected the company's proposal for bonuses of restricted stock and have called for removing caps on bonuses. The union has also threatened to stage an 18-day walkout starting May 21 if negotiations fail, an action that would likely cost the company more than $676 million a day. Samsung workers are frustrated by wage disparities compared to competitors.
The Fiji Teachers Union has proposed the introduction of psychosocial leave for employees. The union's general secretary made the proposal on Tuesday during an event marking World Occupational Health and Safety Day, stating that psychosocial leave was necessary to improve worker welfare. Fijian workers often face psychological stress at work and at home and need time off to resolve these issues. The union stated that many teachers were immigrating for that reason, as Fijian workers seek better conditions in Australia and New Zealand. The current work environment for teachers in Fiji is demanding and often unforgiving, and psychosocial issues are arising from toxic work environments, excessive workloads, job insecurity, and a lack of supervisory support. The General Secretary added that safe working environments, decent wages, and fair workloads are not privileges, they're the rights of every worker. The union has called for the proposal for psychosocial leave to be tabled in Parliament at its next sitting. The Minister for Employment, Productivity and Workplace Relations promised in response to table the proposal.
to Malaysia now. We're close to 1,500 workers, about 75 or 80% of which are migrants, mostly from Bangladesh, have found themselves in limbo after glove manufacturer WRP Asia Pacific closed their factory in the Malaysian city of Sepang. The Migrant Welfare Network reported that discussions on the way forward had been held on Thursday, but workers were yet to be informed of the result. The Migrant Worker Network was following up with authorities to ensure the safety of workers and that they are paid what they are owed and they either receive a timely transfer or are repatriated in a dignified manner. Local activists are calling on union solidarity and coordinated action to protect the rights of these workers. The Ministry of Human Resources has said that they are monitoring the closure of WRP to ensure the rights and welfare of affected employees and that these are protected. And for foreign workers, the employer has made a promise that the welfare provisions, including accommodation and food, will be maintained until redeployment arrangements are finalised.
And over in Turkey, the long-running trial against 15 women trade union leaders from the Confederation of Public Employees Union, KESK, in Turkey, has been postponed once again, with the court delaying its verdict until Monday. An international delegation, including the European Public Services Union and Public Services International, was present in Ankara for the hearing, sending a clear message that the KESK women are not alone and that international trade union solidarity remains strong and visible. After 14 years of proceedings targeting legitimate trade union activities, this latest postponement prolongs the uncertainty for the women involved. The case stems from the women's involvement in KESK's Women's Assembly, an autonomous structure advocating for gender equality and workers' rights. The indictment has relied on internal union meetings and activities as evidence, raising serious concerns about violations of international labour standards.
The Sindh Commission on the Status of Women has called on the government of the Pakistani province to urgently and effectively implement the Sindh Home-Based Workers Act 2018, expressing concern over continued delay since its enactment. The chair of the Sindh Commission on the Status of Women, speaking at an event on Tuesday, noticed that despite being passed nearly 8 years ago, the law has yet to achieve meaningful implementation across the province. In Pakistan, home-based workers are largely informal workforce, is a largely informal workforce dominated by women that number over 4 million across the country. Home-based workers are employed in textile manufacturing and embroidery, yet have low wages and no legal protections. Union leaders stated in response to the event that while the Act has helped bring visibility to home-based workers, significant challenges remain in areas such as registration, social protection, and fair working conditions. Legislative oversight from government is required to implement the law. It is 9 minutes past 9 o'clock here on Community Radio 3CR. I'm going to go to some community announcements and then our feature interview for the morning.
Botanica, a celebration of our natural environment, gardening and sustainability. Gather your Botanica-loving friends and family. The Botanica Festival, the National Trust of Australia, Victoria's annual celebration of the natural environment, sustainability and gardening is returning on Sunday the 10th of May, Mother's Day, at the iconic Ripon Lee Estate. Held in partnership with City of Glenira Council and Milieu Property, Botanica brings together locals, young families and nature enthusiasts to one of Victoria's most majestic heritage listed sites for a lush celebration of nature, well-being and gardening. To find out more about Botanica, please visit ripponleeestate.com.au, a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to 3CR 855 AM, the voice of the community.
3CR, community radio, giving the voice to the community since 1976.
You are listening to Asia Pacific Currents here on Community Radio 3CR with Giselle, Kieran and James. Of course, yesterday marked the 13th anniversary of the collapse of Rana Plaza, one of the world's most significant incidents of industrial murder. Joining us on the program this morning is Josh Cullinan, who has been a long-standing activist in relation to Bangladeshi solidarity, is the recently outgoing secretary of RAFWU, and much more previously to that, a founding member of Bangladesh Solidarity, Australia-Bangladesh Solidarity Network. Welcome to the program, Josh.
Oh, thanks for having me on.
13-year anniversary, we know that the Accord, whilst it's achieved some things, hasn't achieved everything. What would you say 13 years on from the collapse of Rana Plaza?
Well, we know that it still stands as one of the most shocking incidents of industrial murder in the world. But what we would say, or what I would say 13 years on, is that not much has changed for those families and those victims of those murders in Bangladesh. When I was there last year, it still remains as a cesspit. It still remains as a shocking scene of rubble and the world trying to move on around it. But there's no remembrance on April 24 of what's gone on in terms of changing the situation in Bangladesh. The Accord was implemented. There were some fire gates and fire stairs installed on some buildings. Some buildings were checked for their industrial safety, but really these buildings and these workplaces right across the global south that we rely on for our $5 pyjamas remain workplaces fundamentally unsafe.
This year is the kind of the next deadline where that accord gets to be renegotiated and rediscussed. Is there any presence, awareness, is there any realness to renegotiating the accord?
No, the accord is a construct for the West imposed upon the global South. There is no genuine organised union movement amongst garment workers. It amounts to less than 5% of the workforce, and very many of those organisations are yellow. So there isn't an implementation at a ground level of organising, which is, we know, is the only way to make these workplaces safe. So whatever happens between the Europeans and the Americans in any of those negotiations, it doesn't translate to meaningful, real change on the ground in Bangladesh.
With the change in government that's happened in Bangladesh in the last 2 years, have you noticed any change at all in terms of how Bangladesh is approaching this?
Well, there's been a significant change in government. The elected government was only formed in the last few weeks, so that is probably too soon to tell. But the overthrow of the fascist Awami regime, which had been in power for many, many years in uncontested elections, they have been overthrown, and through a popular uprising of workers and students. And many murdered through that process as well, over 2,000, including many garment workers. And so what we do know is that there has been a rewrite of the labour laws. Friend of the movement here and visitor to Australia only several years ago with Rana Plaza survivor Rupali, that friend Taslima Akhtar was a key component to the negotiation and the development of those new labour laws. So we hope that they will actually stand to allow more genuine workers to organise and to change the landscape of the workers' reality in Bangladesh.
Garment workers were a significant factor in the overthrow of the Awami fascist regime. I want you to speak a little bit to the level of organising, because we're aware of how yellow the unions are in Bangladesh, in the garment industry, the absolute repression of genuine, legitimate workers organising within the structure of trade unions. How was it that garment workers were able to organise and mobilise to overthrow a government?
Well, the Bangladeshi community has a long history of revolutionary action, and that is, they see every day that delivered them not only the right to use their language, but the right to govern themselves. And that's in recent, you know, the last 60 or 70 years, their language movement and then their revolution to take control from the neo-colonialist Pakistani government at the time were foundational in them achieving their freedom. And it's part of their folklore and part of their story. And it's intertwined in everything that they do. And so when students started campaigning for fairness and then they were being shot on the streets, that very quickly spread right across the community, and it spread into the enclaves of workers, the massive townships. You know, Dhaka is a city of over 30 million. And so as workers learned of what was happening to their brothers and sisters being murdered on the streets, they joined them on the streets, and it very quickly fell out of control for the government. And that's where the garment workers were involved, because they were walking out of these factories and they were starting to mobilise in the most radical sense. They weren't doing it through unions. They weren't. Unfortunately, the Awami League was full of bosses, but it was of garment worker bosses, but it was also full of the yellow union scabs that controlled the unions that were in place. So they weren't doing it out as an organised. They were doing it through some organised movements, so political parties and political action. But otherwise, they were doing it because they knew in their hearts that if they didn't take action, they would face what they faced, which was genocide and murder in years gone by. And so that's why they took to those streets.
Josh, I'm interested, you know, what are Australian trade unions doing, or what could Australian trade unions be doing to support a genuine workers' organisation in Bangladesh?
I think the same issue arises right across the global south, is that unfortunately Australia's path in international unionism has often taken the European path or the American path, and that is a colonialist approach to how we should deal with unions in Bangladesh. And unfortunately, what that means is that it's the international confederations which at a local level are played by gangsters and thugs and others that are just not doing genuine union. And so really we need to look to and build genuine solidarity with the genuine organisations on the ground in the global south. That takes time, that takes years, that takes relationships. It's the kind of hard slog work that Australia-Asia Worker Links does every day, every week, every year, for decades. And that's what builds genuine relationships. You can't just pick up the phone and ask someone in Brussels or The Hague or in New York, what's the real union in Bangladesh? It's just not. That's just not real. But that's what so many Australian unions rely on. So what we know is that the slow organising and hard work of organisations like Australia Asia Worker Links, and being on the ground and meeting people and building relationships of love, that is what will allow us to find the great leaders in those communities and then work with them, listen to them, be led by them, not to impose the ideas that we think might work, but to learn with them and then be able to share their action on the ground here and to bring more people in Australia along the journey of helping the Global South become radically organised.
You coordinated an event last night to commemorate the anniversary, an important symbol so that we don't forget. Firstly, tell us about last night's event.
It was a great little event. It was organised by Michael Johnson, our organiser at RAFWU. We had our committee members there speaking. So we had our Vice President, Rhiannon, who works at Dangerfield, so the end where we're selling garments. She was there. We also had one of our committee members, and Harry, a committee member there, and they all spoke about what was concerning for them and trying to remember those over 1,100 workers that were murdered. We also were fortunate enough to have Jenny from the Textiles Union National Secretary come, always an activist in this space, always turning up, and she spoke to the link between what was happening in Bangladesh and across the Global South and the ruthlessness of employers, including in Australia.
And I want to go back to something you said very early in the discussion, which is that in Bangladesh, Rana Plaza is almost forgotten. And how do we keep the memory alive of such a significant and wasteful event, the loss of over 1,100 people in the collapse of a building, an absolute preventable incident, and of course that's why we call it murder. If that can't keep the story alive, if that can't keep the pressure on, what does it take to actually win in this kind of context?
I perhaps I have misled. They're certainly in Bangladesh. There is a great deal of heartfelt emotion yesterday and every year. What I really mean is that the sight of that industrial murder is indescribable. It is a cesspit. It is somewhere where people go to urinate. There are strewn rubble and clothing and labels and other things. It is even 10 or 13 years on now. It is a site that is not given any respect. And some people might say, well, what respect should it deserve? But it is such an important part of the story of organising of workers in Bangladesh that it needs to be preserved. And it's a symbol of the powerlessness of workers in Bangladesh, that they are unable to have it as a site of such national significance. And that's where I think that the entire world, whether it's those from states like ours or right across the global south, we all have a role and a responsibility to make sure that the families and communities that were directly affected, that all of the communities of workers that will be forever working and organising, need to have these places remembered. So it is not that Bangladeshis don't know. They certainly know. It is more that the exploiters, the suppliers, the entirety of the Western world have not taken the steps, either sent the money in to help those things happen or taken responsibility for what did happen there. And instead are trying to impose their own colonialist attitude, which is we need to put fire stairs into these factories and we need to check some of the engineering, but we're not going to actually care about the workers that are working in them.
Josh, thank you so much for your time on the program this morning and also the extraordinary work you've done to keep this story present in the minds of Australian trade unionists, because I think it is just an incredibly important piece of work that we must do working internationally to support the growth of trade union movements so that industrial murders like this don't continue to happen. Is there anything you wanted to add to the discussion?
No, but thanks for having me on, and it would be fantastic for folks who are listening to look up online and read a bit more about the story of all of those workers in Rana Plaza, and that the owner remains not held accountable for what they did.
Thank you so much. That was Josh Cullinan. He's an activist in Australia Asia Worker Links, the outgoing secretary of RAFWU, and of course, much, much more previously to that, one of the founding members of Australia Bangladesh Solidarity Network. He travelled to Bangladesh, I think the year before the collapse of Rana Plaza, and then the day that Rana Plaza collapsed. Actually, comrades from AAWL were on the phone to some of those garment workers who were right in the precinct. So Josh's connection to that struggle is very, very, very deep. So appreciative of his thoughts on the show today. But that does bring us to the end of another episode of Asia Pacific Currents here on Community Radio 3CR. Thanks for tuning in. And of course, coming up next is Palestine Remembered. Stay tuned to 3CR for the rest of the weekend, and we'll be back next Saturday with more news and current affairs from the Asia Pacific region. But for now, that's it for me, Giselle Hannah.
Me, James Barry.
And me, Kieran Bennett.
We're going to go out with a track. This is from Little Things, Big Things, Grow by Paul Kelly.
Gather round people, I'll tell you a story, an 8-year-long story of power and pride.
British Lord Vesty, convincing Lingyari were opposite men on opposite sides. Vesty was fat with money and muscle. Beef was his business, broad was his door. Vincent was lean and spoke very little. He had no bank balance, hard dirt was his floor. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. The Rinji were working for nothing but rations, but once they had gathered the wealth of the land, daily the pressure got tighter and tighter. The Rinji decided they must make a stand. They picked up their swags and started off walking. At what a creek, they sat themselves down. Now it don't sound like much, but it sure got tongues talking back at the homestead and then in the town. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. A vesting man said, I'll double your wages, 18 quid a week you'll have in your hand. Vincent said, we're not talking about wages, we're sitting right here till we get our land. Vesty man roared, Vesty man thundered, it don't stand a chance of a cinder and snow. Vince said, if we fall, others are rising. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Then Vincent Lingyari boarded an airplane and landed in Sydney, big city of lights. And daily he went round softly speaking his story to all kinds of men from all walks of life. And Vincent sat down with big politicians. This affair, they told him, it's a matter of state. Let us sort it out while your people are hungry. Vincent said, no thanks, we know how to wait. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. Then Vincent Lingyari returned in an airplane back to his country once more to sit down. And he told his people, let the stars keep on turning. We have friends in the south, in the cities and towns. Eight years went by, eight long years of waiting, till one day a tall stranger appeared in the land. And he came with lawyers, and he came with great ceremony, and through Vincent's fingers poured a handful of sand. From little things, big things grow. From little things, big things grow. That was the story of Vincent Lingyari, but this is the story of something much more. How about